Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel, live broadcast and podcast. Today, we are talking about trail and ultra running and the perimenopause with award-winning author, blogger, speaker and coach, Dr. Juliet McGrattan. How are you today, Juliet?
I'm great, thank you. Yes, how are you?
Yes, I'm very good. We've got loads of questions to ask you about the perimenopause today. It's a real hot topic at the moment. But first, I just need to do a quick shout out to our sponsors, NAC Sports Nutrition. So they make energy bars, waffles, energy and recovery powders, and real food purees in pouches. And coming soon, there will be some energy gels. So that will be very interesting indeed. So I use the chocolate and peanut butter bar and the salted caramel waffle on my Coventry Way 40 miler on Sunday, and they were both delicious and got me round. So if you want to try them, use code Wild Ginger Running, all caps, for 15% off at uk.nac.com. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Juliet. The perimenopause is not a taboo subject anymore. It seems suddenly it's okay to talk about all these womanly things. I'm really excited to dive into this topic with you today. But first, I just want to give everybody a little bit of background about you, because it's really interesting the way you got into running. Can you tell everybody a little bit about how you first discovered running yourself?
Sure. Well, I have to say, I hated it.
So did I.
I tried it.
At school, I hated it.
Oh, yeah, I hated it all then. And then I even tried it. I was working as a junior doctor and thought, yes, I should become a runner. And even as a medical student, I tried it. I just thought it was awful. Everything hurt. I couldn't understand. I like the idea of it, but I couldn't get to that point where it felt even vaguely comfortable. But after I'd had three children, and my third child was literally a few months old, I just knew I had to do something to improve my health and I had to get fitter. And really, I kind of chose running because it was convenient. I live in the country. It's a good old, 40 minute round trip to go to a gym. And I didn't have 10 minutes of my day, let alone 40. So that's really why I chose running. And I went with a friend so that we could have a conversation without being interrupted by a small child. And it sort of went from there, really. Yeah, it kind of took a long time to get comfortable with it. But now I can't imagine my life without it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I can really relate to that because I hated running at school. And then once I found that running wasn't actually running, it was also jogging and a bit of walking, I think everything got a bit better. And do you still live just north of Manchester near to the Lake District?
Yes, I do. Yeah, just outside Lancaster. So I'm really lucky for routes and things because I'm on the border of the Lake District and the Yorkshire Dales. So I'm spoilt.
Wow, that does sound amazing. So do you do trail running as well then?
Yeah, I do. Not as much as I do road running. I'm spoilt with lots of lovely, quiet little country lanes up and down hills and dales and valleys and things. And that's right on my doorstep. But it's really super easy for me to get in a car and get to Ingleborough in 10, 15 minutes and then in the lakes in half an hour. So when I can, yeah, I definitely like to get out onto the trails.
Awesome. So you started running. You've been very modest about everything. But then, because you're also a GP, you sort of I listened to another podcast where you sort of became evangelical about it, and I think that happened to me as well. Like with a lot of late conversions in life, you become evangelical about this thing. You want to tell the world how great it is, don't you? And you actually ended up becoming the Women's Running magazine resident expert on all things health related. How did that happen?
Yeah, so I'm no longer working as a GP. I'm always really transparent about that. I gave up about 5-6 years ago now. But at the time when I discovered how running made me feel, mm-hmm. physically and mentally, I just realised it was just some kind of really powerful medicine. And I just wanted to tell all my patients about it. And I think they got a bit fed up with me, some of them. But I really, you know, it is an incredibly powerful medicine. It reduces the risk of so many diseases, it helps to treat so many diseases, and I just didn't want people to miss out on this superpower that I'd discovered. So I did become very evangelical about it, and then I was actually a reader of Women's Running magazine from about the first issue. My sister bought it for me as a gift, and every month I would read it and think, oh, maybe I could write for this. And it was just one of those random moments when I just saw the email address for the editor, and I just fired off a quick email going, hello, I'm a doctor, I like running, could I write for you? I've never written anything in my life. apart from prescriptions, yeah. But well, I did write a diary when I was a child, and I think that helps when you're a blogger. I think that sort of helps. But yeah, and she got back to me about 3 months later, and I tentatively started doing the odd piece for them, and that was actually, I think, 12 years ago. So I've been writing for them in various forms, with long posts and Q&As and all sorts for over a decade.
Wow, well, that's brilliant. And it's so good to have somebody with like actual scientific expertise behind them telling people things, because there's so much on social media now that, you know, there's myths and all influencers telling people whatever they think and whoever they've been sponsored by. And it's great to know that you've got two books out as well. So there's Sorted, the Active Woman's Guide to Health and Run Well, which is Essential Health Questions and Answers for Runners, which sounds super useful. So I've put links to both of those in, and your blog as well, in the film description below and in the podcast show notes. So yeah, when did you start thinking, oh, I'll write a book about all this stuff then? Or was it the women's running people that said maybe you should? Or like, how did that come about?
Yeah. It was the first editor, Christina, who gave me that first opportunity to write. And then lots of years later, I was just having a conversation with her, and she said, oh, you should write health books. So I credit a lot of this journey to that one amazing person, Christina. But I'd never even really thought about it, because I wasn't terribly good at English at school. I liked reading, but it was never something that was on my bucket list. But I think because I never thought I would be able to do it. But I've had this real drive. I really wanted to get all my GP knowledge out of my head and onto paper in the context of exercise and women. That was the first book, Sorted, because I just felt like it was so useless having it all in my brain and not being able to share it. So I pitched to Bloomsbury and I got it. It wasn't the J.K. Rowling story of, you know, 6,000 rejections. And they really liked it. And it went from there. And then I had to write the thing.
Yeah.
So that was entertaining. That nearly destroyed my my family life. It was really hard work. I learned a lot of lessons. And let's just say the second book was a lot easier to write, because I planned it out properly, and I knew what I was doing, and I felt much more confident about it. And
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully maybe a third one on the way. Let's see.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've got three children, so why not three books as well?
Oh, there you go.
Three different babies of a different kind. So yeah, maybe a perimenopause book, which is what we're here to chat to you about today. So I think it's really great that people are talking about perimenopause more and more, just as I become into my 40s. It's actually ideal timing. Do you think that the world has just started talking about perimenopause more and more? Is this, you did say when I emailed you that you'd been talking about this more and people were calling on you to do a lot of this work.
Yes, because up until probably about 4 years ago, I was very much more generalized in terms of running and health. And then there was a kind of a bit of a switch. I did something for BBC Breakfast about, they were doing a campaign about the menopause with Louise Minchin. And that was, really, I think, really one of the first times the conversations started coming into the media. And then, of course, a few years later, there was the Davina McCall documentaries and things. And all of a sudden, just people kept asking me on that, about that topic, and what did I think, and asked me to write things and speak on it. So I've kind of just gone with it, really. And over the last couple of years, that's pretty much where most of my focus has been, talking about the menopause, how it interacts with running, what it helps, what makes it hard, etc., etc. And I love it. And I think because I am there myself and I see how much women struggle with it, it feels like I can be of some value in this space. So I'm quite happy here at the moment.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, that's brilliant. So we're going to ask you all about it today. And I thought we'd just start off with a first very, very simple basic question of what even is the perimenopause? Because I think for a lot of time you hear people talk about the menopause, but perimenopause is kind of newer thing to me. So what's the difference between those? What is perimenopause and why does it differ to the menopause?
Yeah, so I have a lovely slide, but obviously I can't show that to you right now. But I think if we think of the menopause as one day in time, okay, because often people think the menopause is a period of time. It's not, it's actually one day. Okay. Anything before that is the premenopause, and anything after that is the postmenopause. And then you have this perimenopause, and the perimenopause is the lead up to the menopause. Now, you're said to have reached the menopause. Average age is 51 in the UK, when you haven't had a period for 12 months. Now, the symptoms of the perimenopause can actually last for about 10 years. So about 10 years before you reach that menopause, when you haven't had a period for 12 months, you can get a whole host of symptoms which can affect every system in your body. And that sort of transition phase when you're coming up to the menopause is known as the perimenopause. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think people just used to call it menopausal before, didn't they? And so the menopause meant the lead up as well as the actual ending. So it's nice to have it defined into these categories.
Yeah, I think so. Although I have to admit, even I do still say, oh, I'm menopausal. And you know, I think people do still sort of know what you mean. But if we're being technical, then yeah, that's what it should be.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. And so you mentioned just earlier that there's kind of changes that go on. And Severine had a question right out of the bat. She said, so cool that Juliet is able to join us. I'm wondering about energy levels. Do those change? Is it normal that I am finding running much more of an effort than before? So yeah, I suppose tied in with that question is like, what happens in the perimenopause? What should we perhaps expect as we go into, say, like, I don't know, anything from 40 upwards, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely. So what's happening over that time is that our ovaries, which have previously been releasing an egg every month, that gradually dwindles because our ovarian function sort of declines as we get older. That just happens with age. And as the ovarian function sort of declines, so do the amounts of the hormones that the ovaries produce. And the ovaries, the main ones that they produce are estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. They are made other places in the body too, but the ovaries are the main sort of source of those. So as the ovarian function declines and those hormone levels don't get fired out with so much strength or consistency, because they don't kind of drop in a nice gradual pattern, they go up and down and all over the place as they eventually reduce, that's the thing that gives us symptoms, because there are receptors, those hormones have an effect on pretty much every system in our body. There are receptors all over our body to things like estrogen. So as those hormone levels change, then it affects multiple systems in the body. And I think the typical ones that we think of, or the general public think of, are hot flushes and night sweats.
Yeah, that's like the jokey one, isn't it? And the people are like, oh, my hot flush.
And that does happen. And that can be debilitating for some women. Mm. And that is obviously often the picture that you see along with the social media post about menopause. Mm. But in reality, often a long time before that, or even alongside that, women get huge numbers of other symptoms too. And just picking up on their energy levels, yeah, definitely that can be directly as a result of the changing hormone levels, but also indirectly too, because menopause can affect your sleep. Now, it can affect it because it gives you night sweats and that wakes you up. It can affect it because it makes you need to go for a wee. It affects your bladder function and that can wake you up. But regardless of that, it can just affect your sleep anyway. So that in itself can then make you feel more tired the next day too. But whether you get a good sleep or not, sometimes women just do complain of just feeling lethargic, and running can definitely feel harder. And I've experienced that myself.
Yeah. And are there any other experiences as well? Any other symptoms, sorry, as well, in that runners might find difficult?
Yeah, huge numbers. So, I mean, if we kind of work our way from the top of our body downwards, might take a whole podcast, but I'll keep it brief. Thinking of your anxiety is really common, especially okay. in the early perimenopause, just suddenly losing your confidence and not, yeah, and just feeling really on edge or really anxious or high stress levels. Also, sometimes feeling a bit less competitive. That can be an issue for runners, particularly if that's been their drive to get out and stay motivated before. You can sometimes lose that competitive edge a little bit. Then things like breast tenderness. All of a sudden, your breast, because of hormonal changes, can become really painful, which makes running uncomfortable. Your digestion, suddenly what you used to eat before a run or during a run stops suiting you. You can get heartburn. You can get runner's trots. You can get bladder symptoms. So perhaps if you haven't leaked urine before with the impact of running, that's something that can catch up with you in around the perimenopause. Dry vulvas and vaginas, that can be uncomfortable with friction if you're doing long distance sort of endurance runs. Your skin can change, your joints and your muscles can ache, can take longer to recover. I don't want to sound too negative about depression about all of this, but that just gives you a kind of a picture of some of the symptoms that can actually affect runners, and I'm sure there's some I've missed out there as well.
Yeah, is there what about weight gain? I did a bit of a shout out on social media when I was writing my ultra running book about Severin's watching live. She's just put "We are doomed" in capital letters.
There is some good news. We'll come to that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, are there any advantages? I can see one would be not having periods to worry about anymore, but of course in that perimenopausal phase you're presumably like, when is it gonna come? Like, you have to just carry stuff all the time and just hope that it doesn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah, periods can, before they stop, they can get irregular and they can get heavy, and that can be really inconvenient if you're a runner. So that can sometimes be another symptom that I didn't mention and a bit of an issue. And you mentioned weight gain there as well. That's quite an interesting one, really. So I was reading something about this the other day, looking at the research and really saying that weight gain probably is mostly just due to general aging rather than specifically because of the effect of hormones. I think there's still a lot of research going on in this area because there are changes in the body. And I think if you speak to the majority of women, and I include myself in this, you know, all of a sudden, almost overnight, my waist just expanded, you know, and it's not, I wasn't doing anything different. I wasn't eating any differently. I wasn't training any differently. It just, my body composition, I think that's the thing. We just tend to store more as body fat. And at the same time, we also tend to start losing muscle mass as well. And that body composition change can be really make you feel very self-conscious. Suddenly your clothes don't fit. And again, running is harder if you're carrying extra weight. So that I'd say is one of the biggest things that women ask me about and complain about, because it just doesn't feel good.
Yeah. And that's really funny that you've said that, because that's literally just happened to me. I'm only 41. So it could just be that I ate a lot of cake over Christmas. But it seemed like since the summer when I was 64 kilograms, I'm like nearly 70 kilograms now. And I don't know if it's just me eating a lot of cake over Christmas, because my friend did make me this massive cake that looked like it was like a massive chocolate cake. And I had one slice a day for like 3 weeks. And so I don't know if it was that, but it just seems like all the things I would usually do to lose that weight just didn't work. Like going back to my normal diet, running a bit more, just didn't work. So now I'm sort of like stuck with this like big tummy and I don't fit into any of my jeans. So yeah, I'm glad to hear that it's just perimenopausal. It's not my fault.
I've lost this. I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Hold on.
Shall I just put...
Oh, there we go. I've got you now.
Oh, yes.
So I can hear you again now. Sorry.
Sorry. Which part of the chocolate cake information did you receive there?
I was trying to trying to work out whether 3 weeks of chocolate cake would do this. I think that's the thing. It suddenly you feel a bit out of control of your body. And I think
Like in puberty.
Yeah. As a runner too, you're really in tune with your body, and you're used to how much you eat and how much you run and sort of the energy you need and the balance between those. And all of a sudden it all just seems to be completely messed up. So I think it's another one of those things about the perimenopause that makes you feel like you haven't got any control, which is not something that is very nice to feel.
Yeah. And maybe feeds into a bit of the anxiety that you were talking about earlier as well.
Yeah, definitely. And just sort of losing your sense of self a little bit. Sometimes, I don't know, it's easy to have what they call a midlife crisis, don't they? But just start to feel an imposter in things, or even to doubt your running abilities or your abilities at work, because these things have a massive impact on your work life as well as your home life and your running life. I mean, thinking a bit more about weight loss and weight gain, there are kind of a few theories as to why it happens. Do you want me to sort of explain some of those?
Yeah, I think everybody would be very keen to hear this. Women are always worried about their weight, aren't we? We've been socially conditioned to worry about that, yeah, and things like that, especially if you were brought up in the 90s with all the stick thin models.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, as I say, we don't. A lot of it points to it just being a natural cause of a natural result of aging, and men obviously experience some of this too. But there are some other theories, such as estrogen is made also in fat cells. So if our estrogen levels from our ovaries are reducing, then it's thought that possibly our body might be trying to compensate a little bit by having more fat cells, because fat cells can then make some estrogen. So it might be a way that our body is sort of naturally topping up estrogen a little bit. Also, it can affect our appetite. It can make us more hungry. It can make us just want to eat all the chocolate cake. Mm-hmm. And also, we know that we lose muscle mass from the age of about mid-30s, really. We lose a little bit every day, but that loss speeds up around the menopause. And we know that muscles use a lot more energy than fat. Then its body isn't using quite as much energy as it was. Mm. And therefore, it's for us to gain weight while we're still eating the same amount of food. So there's lots of things. Sort of honest with ourselves, and we look at our lifestyle, because our lifestyles do vary a lot. You know, I writing two books, I became really sedentary, and I realized that has a massive impact on my general health and on my body composition. So here I am standing up now for this body. Trying to do more work standing up, and it's a time of life when our habits and our daily routines do change. So just have a look at your daily life and see, yes, you might be running as much, but what are you doing the rest of the time? Because that's a really important factor.
Yes, yeah, running around after a toddler, that's my life now.
You might think that's a bad thing, but it's doing you lots of good.
yeah, definitely. We've got a live question as well from Arlene M. She's over in the States. She says, hi, and thanks for this. She says she's a bit past perimenopause at 65, but she was shocked to find out that she has osteoporosis, even with all her running. So she's asking for any advice about running with osteoporosis, and also how to avoid it for the younger ladies.
Yeah, that's a really important point, Arlene. Thank you so much. So again, we're talking about losing muscle mass there. We also lose bone mass. We reach about 90% of our bone mass when we're 19, and then we hit our peak again around 30. And then we lose a little bit every year, but that does speed up around the perimenopause too. And if you have low bone mass, that can lead to conditions like osteopenia, where your bone mass is a bit low on the low side, and then osteoporosis, where your bone mass is particularly low, which puts you at more risk of fractures, particularly in the wrist and the spine. Now I'd be a little bit careful, like, you know, I wouldn't want to say, yes, Arlene, 100% everybody with osteoporosis should run, because there are some caveats to that, and it depends on the type of osteoporosis, the severity, the location. So always check with your healthcare professional, especially if you're not someone who's never run before. But generally, running is a really powerful way for us to protect our bone mass. So if you are a runner, you can you can, you know, feel really confident that you're doing something really great to help prevent that condition. Because every time your foot hits the ground, it jolts your bone a bit. And bones like stress. They respond really well to stress. So if the bone jolts, it triggers the cells to make a little bit more bone mass. So over years of running, you know, that's something that's amazing. And perhaps if Arlene hadn't been a runner, maybe her condition may be more severe than it is now. There are other factors that put you at risk of osteoporosis, to do with smoking and alcohol and genetics and medications you might be taking. So I would read more about it. But I think for the bulk of us, to know that our running is something really positive, as is our strength work. Because we used to think it was just high impact stuff, the strength and bones. But we now know that when you use a muscle and it's the tendon tugs on it, when you're using resistance, like a heavy weight or something, that stimulates the bone too. So it's really a really important way that all of us can help to protect our bones by getting out and running. But as I say, if you have it and it, then just please just check.
We don't want any broken bones or any injuries there. And that's really interesting that you brought strength into that, because when you were saying about the loss of muscle mass, I suddenly thought, oh yes, I know that we are supposed to do more strength training. And that is the one thing that runners are really, we really suck at strength training, don't we? We, as perimenopausal women, do we have to do more strength training in your view?
I'm sorry, but yes. And this is a realization that I have had to face. You know, I've been one of those runners, I just want to run, and every now and then I feel a bit guilty and maybe do some squats or something. But now I've had to get really serious about it, because, you know, if there's one thing that perimenopausal women can do for their health, it really is to gain some muscle. You can gain some through your running. Running, you know, it uses muscles, particularly if you're doing things like sprints, hill intervals, things that really use those big, powerful quads and glutes to help strengthen them. But it doesn't seem to be enough. And also there are some easy wins if you start lifting some heavy weights, say particularly for your upper body. You know, it doesn't take long to start seeing some difference and realize that you're improving your muscle mass if you start lifting some weights in your upper body. Ooh. So I'm kind of going for the easy, for the easy wins.
That sounds great. Take us through your routine. What do you do then? Is it a weekly thing that you do, or like 10 minutes a day? How do you do it? And what do you do?
Well, the guidelines, and these are the chief medical officer's guidelines for all of us, is that we should do strength work twice a week. Now, obviously, for some people, that doesn't necessarily have to mean going to a gym. And I don't belong to a gym. I just have home weight. So there are things that you can do at home, starting with your own body weight, using resistance bands. But I would encourage you, particularly in the perimenopause, to look at getting used to gradually increasing to heavier weights and not feeling afraid of that. Getting some advice if you can from a personal trainer to make sure you've got a good form and that you're doing it sort of correctly. But it has to be easy for me, or it doesn't happen. That's the same for everyone. And as I say, I'm not near a gym, so I use home weights and I use an online class. I try to do it twice a week. I usually do a 10-minute class, and then after the 10 minutes, I think, oh, I might as well just carry on. So I usually end up doing sort of 20 minutes twice a week.
And are these actual classes that there's an instructor and you're just sort of on Zoom, or is it just you go on YouTube and just select one that you think looks good?
So it's an app, and it's not, you can do live ones, but I don't do live ones. It's Fit. Fit is the one I use. And I think Peloton do similar. There are lots of different ones. Mm-hmm. But I select the strength class, and then I select intermediate and the body part I want to work on. And then it comes up with the ones that I could do. And I choose my favorite instructors. And it's funny, because I used to feel really weird doing that at home. I didn't want anyone to come in. I keep the bedroom door shut. And then COVID happened. And then it just became completely normal for me to be doing a ballet class in the kitchen, my husband to be on Zwift in the living room, and my daughter to be doing something upstairs. So now all family members are quite happy, and it's just normal to sort of step over somebody as you...
Doing the blank.
Exactly. And the dog loves it as well. So I am not an angel, and I'm...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I still have a lot of work to do, but I do feel like it. I know I haven't got any choice now, really. I just need to do it. So I'm trying
to do it.
Run through discipline. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, everyone's really pleased about these easy wins. Andrea says easy is good, and Severine says we like easy wins. And completely changing the subject, Arlene is watching live, so she says thanks for answering her question. She says, should women take HRT? That's a biggie, isn't it?
Ooh, it's such a biggie. Yes, if I suppose there's actually quite an easy answer to this. Yes, if you want to, and yes, if the risks of you take the benefits of you taking it outweigh the risks.
Yeah,
and that's the kind of short answer. It's important, I think, to say at this point, if you have an early or a premature menopause. So early menopause is reaching menopause before 40. And premature is before 35, because the way I've been talking so far, a lot of the narrative is around women around 50. But it's really important to realize that the menopause can happen a long time before that, and the symptoms can happen a long time before that. It may be natural, it may be due to surgery or medical treatments and genetics that women have a premature and early menopause. And for those women, it's really important to go and speak to your doctor about hormone replacement therapy. Because if you have a premature menopause, say at 34, it's a long time till you get to 51, the average age of the menopause. So ideally, you know, you would have hormone replacement to take you through to that average age, and then you sort of reassess.
Does it delay the menopause then, HRT?
No, it doesn't. It just can replace the hormones that tend to get lower during the perimenopause. So it's not going to, you have your early menopause, but then you're able to replace what you would have had.
Yeah. So does it, do you have to just take it for life then? Because presumably if you come off it, you'll have the symptoms back again.
That is a very contentious question as well. because it do you see it as a deficiency? Or a transition? And there are a lot of people that say, well, yes, we need those hormones, we live longer than we ever used to, so we should take them forever, or, you know, at least well into the future. And there are others that say, look, this is a transition phase that our body's going through, and it can help to smooth the bump, and you do come out the other side of it. And that's a very sort of personal thing. But what you mentioned there about symptoms is the most important reason for taking it, is to manage and control your symptoms. So if you are having symptoms such as those hot flushes, sweats, joint ache, pains, etc., they're interfering with your daily life, then yes, please, you know, don't put up with things. You don't have to be a martyr to the, you know, just go and speak to the doctor and see whether the benefits for you could outweigh the risks. There are a few situations where, mainly really for osteoporosis, HRT can be used as a preventative, and there's good evidence for that. What we're not too sure about yet is how strong the evidence is for taking it to prevent other diseases like dementia and heart disease. There is new evidence coming out that it may be helpful, again, maybe for some women, maybe not for others. So it's always a really personal conversation. But if you're struggling and you're not using it, don't be afraid of it. Go and have a conversation. And when you stop it, is really up to you. It's not a case of stop it, bam, all the symptoms come back. But there are women who take it through into their 80s, 90s. But again, the risks for them, the benefits for them, hopefully still outweigh the risks. And it's something that's usually reviewed every year or two, should be every year really, by the GP or the practice nurse to make sure that your benefits still outweigh your risks. I'm not taking it yet. Because I just haven't felt like I've needed it. I feel like my lifestyle changes that I've made are controlling my symptoms. But I tell you, if that balance starts to shift, I've got no issue at all about going and giving it a bash, let's see.
Yeah. I interviewed someone recently for Summit magazine. She's a mountaineer and she leads groups in the hills, and she was off work for 3 months because she got such bad symptoms, and she didn't realise it was a fairly sort of a early-ish menopause because she was just in her early 40s. So she wasn't expecting it till late 40s. And she had horrendous symptoms, like all down her left side was tingling. She had really bad headaches, brain fog. She got really anxious. She couldn't even communicate, she couldn't speak to people, so she couldn't work with clients. She had these pounding headaches, and she was just putting up with it for like months, and it was getting worse and worse and worse. And because she didn't go to the doctor until it was really bad, they immediately thought, oh my god, she's got something wrong with her brain, like she's got some kind of brain tumor. And it wasn't till her stepdaughter, who's a nurse, said some of these symptoms do sound a bit like menopause, like perimenopause, that she said to the GP, oh, could it be perimenopause? And he was like, oh, I hadn't even thought about that, sorry. And then she started taking some, I think she's on some estrogen, is it the estrogen gel that you can get, and a progesterone tablet, and within 24 hours the symptoms had gone, and within a week she was back at work. So that's obviously a very extreme case, but it's just to have that awareness, isn't it, for women to think, oh, hang on a minute, could this be the perimenopause? Would it be just as simple as HRT perhaps?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. And doctors don't too, you know, and I now look back and think, goodness, did I underserve some of the women that I saw because I didn't think of the perimenopause? And I can definitely think of one woman, you know, where I was very much down all anxiety and depression and let's give us antidepressants rather than thinking, oh, she could be perimenopause. And that was just lack of awareness and education. And there's a lot more of that now and a lot more education for GPs and, well, all doctors about the menopause. But it's tricky because the symptoms can be confused with so many things.
Yeah.
And some of the symptoms of the menopause are similar to symptoms like having an underactive thyroid, or also, really importantly, to overtraining or underfueling your body. And as a runner, that's something that we need to be aware of too. You know, losing your periods and getting brain fog and losing your motivation could be the perimenopause, but it could be what we call red S, relative energy deficiency in sport, you know, under fueling your body or overtraining or a mixture of the two. So it's a bit of a minefield, really. And I think just not being afraid to document, write down your symptoms, look for patterns and go and speak to somebody and advocate for yourself sometimes as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I do want to ask you about the lifestyle changes that you've personally made. But Severine's just got a question. She says, is there a reason that women don't seem to get a testosterone replacement? Because like we talked about the estrogen gel and then the progesterone pill. Is the testosterone not like a significant player in this?
Oh, you've got all the good questions today.
Well, the audience is very intelligent.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we don't have a massive amount. Women are very understudied generally. In medical science. And the menopause, again, is another area where we don't have huge amounts of research. It would make sense, wouldn't it, that if our testosterone levels are falling and our estrogen and progesterone, that giving some testosterone back would be a good idea. At the moment, certainly in the UK, it's only really licensed to use in women who are already taking and progesterone if they need it.
I don't know if it was my headphones, but that just dropped out there. Sorry, would you mind repeating that just in case it didn't broadcast? Because it was like a key piece of information about testosterone. Sorry.
I can't hear me.
Oh, yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Don't you love it when it's live?
Oh, is it my headphones?
Yes, I've got you now.
It just dropped out slightly with just as you were talking about.
Okay.
It might be a good idea to give a little bit of testosterone, but it's only in women who have something.
Okay. Yeah. So it's licensed in the UK for women who are taking other HRT at a good dose. So that's estrogen and progesterone if the woman needs it, if they still have a uterus, in women who have low libido, so low sex drive. And that's what it's licensed for. Now, there are some doctors who are happy to use it outside of that license. Now, they may be GPs. They may be GPs who have a special interest in menopause, or they may be menopause specialists and experts who feel confident to use it outside of that license. And I know, you know, some women say for them it was the missing piece in the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And it really did help with a lot of the symptoms that the other hormones hadn't helped with. But it's not widely available in the UK yet. And I think it is, you know, we've got to be sure that it's safe before it's added as a part of routine part of hormone replacement therapy. But I think it's definitely something to watch this space. And if it is something that you feel on your research that you need, then speaking to a menopause expert or discussing it with your GP is something that you can do.
Yeah. Awesome. That's really clear. Thank you for that. And so, yeah, you said that you're not personally on HRT and you've made certain lifestyle changes. Are you happy to share any of those with us so that we can sort of copy you and see if that works for us too?
Yeah, of course. Well, the first thing I did was to stop caffeine. And that was a few years ago when I was feeling a bit on edge and mm-hmm. getting a few palpitations and just feeling a bit jittery, kind of that sort of feeling. I didn't at that particular point necessarily think that it was perimenopause. So, but I stopped caffeine and that definitely helped. And I just know that I'm more sensitive to it now. And that's something that is quite common. I can have the odd cup of coffee if I'm going to do a run and I want to get a PB, yeah. which is quite handy because then it's like, what is this stuff?
Yeah, it's like a performance enhancing drug, isn't it? I cut it out years ago because I used to get heart palpitations with it. So yeah, I'm like, don't give me caffeine. It's
quite helpful. Yeah. Also, I'm not going to say cutting out alcohol because I haven't, but I'm just acutely aware that I'm much more sensitive to it. And I know I'm okay with one glass of wine. If I have two, I'll be up in the night with night sweats. Sometimes that's something I'm prepared to take the trade off. Most of the time it's like, oh, I can't be bothered. I just want to sleep. So I'll have less. So definitely watching that. Thirdly, definitely trying to be more active through the day. So I'm standing up now. I try to do quite a lot of my work standing up, not very glamorous, laptop on shoebox kind of setup, because I just know that my body composition is changing. So, and I do know that my lifestyle did change just a bit, very subtly over a number of years. The kids got older. I wasn't running around after them so much. I was driving them to more places. So I was spending more time in the car. I was doing a work that involved me having to drive. Yeah, just looking at everyday activity and trying to increase that. And I don't feel like I've got particularly high stress, but I know that stress is something that can really affect women around the perimenopause and also is known to be unhelpful when it comes to trying to get your body composition and your body weight right. So I do try to actively de-stress, but I think I would probably be doing that anyway. It's not necessarily a particularly lifestyle intervention that I've put in. And just keeping running, because running's just like, I don't know what I'd do without it. You know, it helps to control your mood when you're feeling really irritable with perimenopause. If you've got brain fog, you can just go out and listen to something and lose yourself for a little while. And I don't know, all so many symptoms that it there's not great evidence really in terms of symptom reduction with running. Possibly it can help to reduce the intensity and number of hot flushes. Mm-hmm. But again, some studies say no, some studies say yes, but it probably does. But for me, I think it's more the mental health symptoms and just easing up some of the aches and pains that seem to be cropping up out of nowhere, standing like an old lady when I get up out of a chair because I kind of go...
Yeah, I have noticed that on the days when I, if I'm tapering for a race, for example, and I don't run all week, I just walk, I find my hips hurt. Like, it's like as if the running lubricates that, which presumably it is with all the bone pounding. And do you, Arlene says, do you take any vitamins or supplements? Is there any advice around that?
Yeah, so I mean, I take vitamin D. And that is the only thing I take regularly. And everybody should really be taking that, particularly if they live in the UK and we don't get very much sunshine or in the Northern Hemisphere. So I definitely take that. I'm not a big supplement person. I generally try to get as much as I can through my diet. I realise that's not realistic for everybody. I'm privileged to be able to spend time and being able to afford to buy, you know, good foods. But definitely vitamin D. In terms of supplements to help with menopause symptoms, there's mixed evidence. There are some that can be helpful, things like red clover. A good resource is a website called Menopause Matters, and that has quite a good section on alternative medicines and supplements and things that you can take to try to reduce menopause symptoms. Omega-3 oils can be probably quite helpful too in terms of joint health I don't take it regularly. Kind of every now and then I'll see it and think, oh, maybe I'll just knock one of those back.
Oh, sorry, it cut out a little bit there. Oh, do you say something again? I can't hear you again. Can you hear me? Oh no, what's going on? Let's have a look. Oh no, I can't hear you. Is it these? Hello, can you hear me? Come back in now. Can you hear me? Oh, yeah, sorry. We can hear you again. Yeah, sorry. You were just talking about the cod liver oil and you just get one and knock one back. The live chat is going mad with the idea of stopping caffeine. Andrea says, the idea of stopping caffeine makes me anxious. Coffee addict here. Stopped alcohol for 30 years now, and that was brilliant for many reasons. And Severine says, drinking now wakes me up in the night, so it's very annoying, especially if used to relax as well. Brilliant. And there is a question from Maria as well. She says, what are the signs that it is time to change your training setup? And she's also talking about recovery as well. So let's do the training first. Sorry, it's going backwards a bit to how we've covered it so far. But are there any signs that you can use to know when it's time to change the training that you're doing to help you through the menopause?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do find that I have had to adapt my training, but not everybody does. I think one of the traps we sometimes fall into, particularly if you're noticing the body composition change, is that you just think you should need to run more. And they just need to run more and more miles to burn off more and more calories and energy. And you know, I'm never somebody that likes to run to control weight. I like to run because I like to run. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of women do fall into that trap when they feel their body changing, think I need to run more and more and more and more. And sometimes that really isn't the answer, because then you can get more and more tired, and then that has sort of knock-on effects and things as well. So that's when I think those strength exercises and those short interval sessions and hill session things can be really helpful. I don't think there's a magic time. I think you just have to look at trends over time and see what's happening with your running. Most importantly is that you need to enjoy it. And I found that I stopped enjoying it for a while because I just felt like I was getting slower and it was just more effort and harder. And that made me, I then lost my motivation. So that for me was a kind of a sign that I needed to make some adjustments and some changes. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody's different and there isn't necessarily one magic moment, and you might not need to, you know, you might be up because, you know, we've painted this terrible picture.
Bleak picture.
Some women are fine. About 25% of women don't get any symptoms at all. 75% do. Yeah. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to, although I would address the adding in strength.
Yes, I was just going to mention, but we all need to do more strength, whatever age we are, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But other than that, just seeing how you go, really.
Okay, yeah, just suck it and see. And she says she understands and experiences that recovery is slower. How is it best to handle this? She says good sleep seems to be important, but is also a thing that is affected negatively. Very interesting topic. I will be sure to tune in this afternoon. Well, thank you, Maria. We'll see you live.
Yeah, I think one thing about recovery is that it tends to get slower as we get older.
Yeah.
So that may or may not be related to the menopause. It's easy to blame everything on the menopause, isn't it?
When we need
to
sort of, very handy.
What's that gonna happen anyway? But recovery does do seem to need a little bit longer to recover, perhaps because if you experience more joint pains and muscle aches and things, and also because your sleep can be interrupted. So sleep is a really important factor. It may be that you need to, depending on your training plans, but you may find that you dropping one of your runs a week and replacing it with something else can be a helpful tool, even just for a little while, maybe not forever.
Yeah.
And I always say, if you're following a training plan for like a half marathon or a marathon or something, when you look at the plan at the beginning, add in a couple of menopause weeks. So give yourself a couple of extra weeks in the plan, mm-hmm. just so you've got a little bit of slack in the system, because you never know how you're going to feel day to day with the perimenopause. You might just have a really bad few days, and rather than then cause stress because you're feeling like you're behind, if you've built in a couple of extra weeks, you've got time to sort of play with, and then you can give yourself a little bit more recovery, because that often, you know, we need that. And if we don't prioritize the recovery, then the wheels are going to fall off.
Yes, yeah, that's brilliant. And Maria's watching live, and she says hi and thank you. That's awesome. I'm just wondering, we're coming to the end of the time, but I just wondered if there's any common myths that you have to keep debunking about the perimenopause.
Yeah, so I think the first one probably is when it happens, and the age. And I do quite a lot of talks about the menopause, like in schools and to teachers and in workplaces and things. And that's the first one that everyone goes, oh, because when you show them the graph that the symptoms can happen 10 years before and that it can still be a normal age of menopause at 41, mm-hmm. because that's, at 46, because that's, yeah. you know, older than 45. 10 years before that is 36. And most women aren't thinking about menopause when they're 36. So I think that's the first one, is the myth that it's something that happens to women in their 50s. Mm-hmm. And that's a hugely important one.
Yeah.
Which other big myths, let me think. That everybody needs to have HRT. And that is a very hot discussion at the moment. Yes, it can be amazing. It can be life-changing for some women, but you don't necessarily have to have it. And that lifestyle changes can be really powerful, and everybody, regardless of whether they use HRT, should look at the lifestyle changes and doing what they can. Control what you can control is what they say, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think that's another really big one. I'm probably missing some. Let me think. I think probably as well, maybe not everybody feels this, but that your running days are over. They really are not. It might feel like it for a short period of time, but there, you do get through this. And, you know, there are some incredible women out there of menopausal and postmenopausal age doing some amazing things, you know, making their own records, doing things they never thought they could do. So I think it's easy to feel really negative, but there's every reason for us to be hopeful and positive and do what we can and just keep going, and we will get through it.
Yeah, and because running really helps. So the fact that we are runners, that's just a massive plus point. And, you know, if you could bottle that and sell that as HRT, then you'd make millions of pounds, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Let's try and do it.
Yeah. So you've got plenty of resources, haven't you, for runners on your blog site. You've got courses, you've got books. Where should people go to find out more about what you can offer them?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the best place to go is my website, which is just drjulietmcgrattan.com. And everything's on there. I have a weekly newsletter for perimenopausal and postmenopausal runners where I ramble on about stuff, but people seem to like it.
I've just signed up for that myself. Yeah.
Often my thoughts that come to me on a long run, as well as sort of tips and sharing things. And then, yes, I have a course, I do talks, I speak to running clubs, I speak to workplaces, and I do some one-to-one coaching for women who've just kind of lost their way completely in midlife as well, which I absolutely love. So
yeah, it sounds like you're really good at that, because you're so enthusiastic about everything. And what I love about talking to you is the way that you've just got a real gift for explaining complex scientific and health issues in a way we can all understand. So it's been really fascinating chatting to you today.
Oh, thank you. I that's something I really enjoy. And I think that comes from having 10 minutes with a patient to get understand what they're saying, explain the topic and what they need to do in the space of 10 minutes over about 20 odd years of doing that. I'm hoping that some of those skills have been transferred into what I now do. So
definitely, it's awesome. And I really like, I was listening to your other podcast with Anna, and you were saying how you felt a bit guilty for stepping away from the world of being a GP into the new world of sort of sharing your knowledge through blogging and writing articles and books and things like that. And someone said to you, but you're reaching even more people now. And so I think that's fantastic that you've come on here and you've reached several thousand people who will be really aching to hear this kind of information, because you've a lot of things, don't you, on Instagram, and it's nice to have a point where you think, no, this lady knows what she's talking about and we have the truth here.
Oh, thank you. I think sometimes it's hard to walk that line, because it's not very exciting sometimes. The truth is that it's hard work, that lifestyle changes, you know, it takes effort, there's no magic answers, so sometimes it's not quite so glamorous or exciting to be doing that. But I really, yeah, I just need to be true to myself, and I just want women to get the right information and to keep running.
Yeah, keep running. Well, Maria says, I think you've converted Maria. She says, I'll be sharing this video with all my friends. And Severine says, I'm really hoping that my running will improve regardless of perimenopause, which sounds possible. So that is great. So I think you've eased some people's minds there. And I think you've given me some inspiration as well to sort of make some lifestyle changes that might help as well.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. And I just want to say, last year, I decided to take a dose of my own medicine and to walk the talk or whatever. And I did a marathon in the perimenopause. And despite thinking at the beginning it was going to be a disaster, smashed it out of the park. So to your listeners, do keep going.
Yeah, fantastic. Oh, congratulations. Which marathon was that then?
That was Manchester. I'd done it before and I had unfinished business there. So, yeah. But it is possible. It's not easy, but it's possible.
Awesome. Yes. Well, that is amazing. Yeah. And it's good. Just keep going. Keep running, everybody. And just before we go, I just need to say thanks to NAC Sports Nutrition for sponsoring the live broadcast and podcast. So I'm looking forward to trying out their energy gels on my next ultra, which is Race to the King in June. And if you want to try some, there's a code, Wild Ginger Running, for 15% off at uk.nac.com. And I do want to read out some more live comments, because everyone's there's about a 90-second delay. So Andrea says, this has been really good. Nadia says, thank you so much, this was wonderfully helpful. And Severine said, I did a marathon on Sunday and it went well, slow but all good. Oh, congratulations, Severine. And Arlene M says, thanks so much as well. So yes, that's been very positive. Oh, are you on Instagram or any social medias that we should follow you on as well, Juliet?
Yes. I'm all on all of them, mostly on Instagram now. And that's just my name, Dr. Juliet McGrattan. So, and it's all on my website. So come and say hello, please.
Awesome. Oh, well, thank you so much, Juliet. It's been absolutely brilliant talking to you today. I think everybody has really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.